This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Good evening, everybody. I am absolutely delighted to be doing a part three with Dan Welch, historian. And we always have a good laugh.
Funny.
We always have a good laugh. Please get you're crackling, Dan. Is it your microphone?
I don't think so. I got it on. I got everything.
Let me just change my settings then, see if I can adjust that.
Echo cancellation.
5,000, 4,000, 3,000, 2,000. Yeah, I think you're all right. I think it was when you moved something.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Yeah, we're good.
I just popped right on the top there.
All right. The question today is, who benefits from more war in Ukraine? We're going to be talking about all the latest geopolitical news, including US, Iran, China, all of that. Zelensky, the Pope, everything. Zelensky have both offered the condolences, haven't they, to the Pope? Have you seen that? Right. They agreed on one thing. So, you know, in since we last spoke, man.
Yeah.
What's been your main focus on the geopolitics?
Well, you know, it's hard to keep your eyes in one place because they have so much going on all the time in so many different places. It's like this a chessboard, and people always accused, I think, Bush before, but you know, they would have memes of Putin playing checkers and Bush playing chess, or Putin strolling down a line of world leaders knocking over chess pieces, you know, checkmate, 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 things like that, that gave the opinion or the kind of overall view that the guy in the White House matters, I think, more than he does. And when I say that, I mean that it's been hard for me too. When you think of who does this benefit? Well, who started it? Whose idea has it been from the beginning? Not in, you know, just in Ukraine, but in Guatemala, you know, in Panama, in Chile, in Iran, going all the way through modern history. And why the big larger question is, why should or would the US opt out at this very, very late point in the game? And the one reason it's so bizarre is I was reading a Russian friend of mine. He says, so you imagine you're watching a hockey game. All of a sudden, one team strips off their jerseys and puts on, you know, black and white stripes and says, okay, we're referees. It's the stupidest, most ahistorical, bizarre thing. But I think the thing about who benefits is that obfuscating cui bono, obfuscating who benefits and what their point is, has been the main MO of the Anglo-Saxon empires since the beginning. And they would love to say that they are spectators, brokers. Did you imagine this, Sean? Arbitrators. It's like Mike Tyson walking in and saying, I didn't mean to hit him so hard. You know, like, it's ludicrous, and it's kind of difficult to sort out. And one of the things that I think is going on is that it's clear that the Americans lost. The West lost. Russia won. The West lost. This is huge. So whom does it benefit? Well, even the question is too late, because what we're doing is trying to end run a war that's already been fought. What the Russians are doing and what they will continue to do is pursue the goals they set out with from the very beginning. This is the decimation of the bulwark of attacks at Russia through Ukraine, using Ukraine as a battleground, as a nuclear testing point, as a kind of collapsible lawn chair. Of it's like the Americans take their revolution slash a scale measuring device and bring it to a different beach, open it up and say, here, they're the terrorists, fire at them. Oh, we have to pack up and go. And now they're in that aspect of what they do. The problem is, obviously, you can start with the people who seem to be crowing about it, like the EU and the NATO certainly have a war fever that is really beyond belief. I mean, it's insane to keep talking like this, to allow the kind of, maybe it's a vacuum, to allow people like Kallas to insert themselves, a tiny non-entity with a Nazi background, right? Who's can go and put flowers at her own grandfather's grave in one of these. The same thing happened with Baerbock. Maria Zakharova, whom I adore. I think she is just a brilliant woman and funny. And she gave a shout out to Baerbock, because it was like my wife compared it to Elaine from Seinfeld. Like, yeah, maybe your mother can tell you. You live at her house now, don't you? Like, she just said, your grandfather was taken prisoner here, right? Yeah. So this goes for you too. This was for the liberation of Königsberg. Anyway, these kind of Nazi seedlings have been, you know, pushing up all over Europe ever since, well, since before the war ended. You know, I remember I won some literary prizes, you know, linguistic prizes, and I won a trip to Germany when I was in high school, kind of thing. And I was kind of imbued with this anti-Axis view of the world war that we were grown up with. My father was in the South Pacific, all this stuff. And then you meet like German, this is in Nuremberg, so it's not Niedersachsen, it's not in the north, it's closer to Bayern and to Munich, and have people strike up a conversation and have them say, yeah, I think, you know, Roosevelt made a mistake, you know, he should have rearmed, should have kept us going on to Moscow. And I was like, who the hell am I talking to? And I said, well, this was, but Hitler did this, da, 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 da. And this guy would say, look at me and say, nah, Denny, du bist a bissel rot. You're a little red, aren't you? Du bist a bissel rot. I'm like, I'm 18 years old, having my seventh beer, or well, it was Germany, so I had my 17th beer. And have this guy mouthing this proto-fascist drivel, which is a very common thread. And not, it's not just blaming the German psyche or anything. This was in, this was heaviest in the Western powers. They wanted this from the beginning. They had 150 targets for nuclear devastation in post-war Soviet Union right after they dropped the bomb. We get 100. Well, okay, we got 100 now. Let's just keep going. And I mean, you know, I've said this before. They have a very worked out plan between the Pentagon and the CIA and everyone else of how to take over the moon, how to capture Mars, how to, you know, do whatever. I get it. I know that that doesn't mean that they're all legitimate, but they all have kind of strains of the oligarchy that are supporting them. This was an argument for a very long time, and it feels like it's emerging, re-emerging, that this is, and the people who want to stop the war are the right-wing populists. They're the enemies. They're the real Nazis. We have to be careful of Alternative for Deutschland because they're pro-Russian, and they want the war to end. It's phenomenal to watch it happen in real time. It does feel like we're living through a pivotal point in history when you have military and diplomatic history being written at the same time. And that's when you get about the crack about the hockey players changing jerseys. Like, okay, so you're not soldiers now. You're on the other side of a table, but you brought the table and you set it up. And now you're putting yourselves at the head of the table. You can't do that. That's not how this works. But they have to lose with some dignity. They have to lose and save face. So saying that they brokered a truce instead of suing for peace, I think, see, maybe it's that language thing. No, that's not brokering a truce. That's called suing for peace. And it's the end of every war. And the loser does that to get what he can because his imminent death is the only available option, which he has finally decided is not in his own best life interest. Right? Oh, I didn't realize we were all going to die. And it's also within Ukraine, obviously, there are factions, and the neo-Nazis are absolutely unstoppable. I mean, there's no way that they never, that's why they were picked. And it's like when you have thrown a bunch of knives into a toddler room and asked the kids to go wild, and then you come back and you say, holy shit, what were we thinking? There's blood all over the walls, there's dead kids everywhere, and you can back out. It's like, you know, when Savak, for example, Pinochet, all of these things have had their roots in CIA planning, really. I mean, what did they look at? The whole thing has been from that side. And I'm not Russian. I know Putin is hardly a communist and hardly a leftist, but he is a historian. And he says just flat out, look, 95% of these things are all planned by the CIA. You know, any false flag you see is almost certainly. And, you know, I mean, from wading through history and uncovering the lies that have been fed to kids and grown-ups alike, it's hard to argue with that. You say, oh, so we chose that then. Oh, that's weird, because we were taught that it was in favor of what was that word? Democracy. Oh, right. Okay. And that only means who is which corporation is in charge. It's like, no. It's people who own the corporations. Oh, I still don't get it. You know what? Don't try to get it, Dan. You don't control anything. Just so you know, it's not up to you. Oh, okay. What choices do we have? None. And, you know, look, we put this thing together. We call it an election. It's more like a carousel with or the whack-a-mole thing at the state fair where you bang the heads down. I mean, you can do what you want. And that you can call yourself an associate, right? Is that what Starbucks does? You can call yourself a votista. You're part of the team because you got to vote. But the main drive is continuing, and that is that the permanent war favors the same interests and will continue like the whack-a-mole machine. It just comes up in different parts and has different needs. I'm not conspiratorial quite enough to say that Trump was hired to do a job, but he fits a good bill. Someone had to try to talk their way out of this Ukrainian thing. If you look at how Biden's team, or Biden 2.0, if she had anything to do with anything, but I guess the whole world, she's forgotten about herself already, so we don't have to remember her. Anyway, the things in the last month of the regime, when they were kicking more money in and kicking, and we're still kind of going through all of that money that was done. What they're trying to do, the Democrats and Republicans do so well, is make it the other guy's war, right? So that you have to lose, unless you're going to win. But in the era of permanent war, you're never concerned about winning. You just want to keep the other side attriting, spending money, wasting time, and that sort of thing. And I think that Trump gets enormous pushback, which is hilarious, because he gets it mostly, and not mostly, I would say, but obviously from the neocons, from Victoria Nuland and her husband and the other guy and his wife and whatever small bandit of neocons. Oh, Elliot Abrams, and they were in cahoots with the Democrats to keep this thing going. But now they want to say, and they're getting their proponents to say that this is bad. I mean, it's basically the only thing that Trump gets right. It's amazing. And so you still have these national kind of Trump derangement syndrome rallies where people have big signs that say "Dump Putin's puppet." And these people, and well, it is to create and uncreate a narrative. That's what's so amazing, is that you don't know what you're listening to. One commenter just said that don't listen to the media. There's nothing but lies. I know. And the war machine has no party. Absolutely. Never has. They used Vietnam, I think, to create a loyal opposition on home territory. And make it, that helped with some elements of the war on poverty and the kind of liberalization of American domestic politics, etc. But that was really an anomaly when you look at the broad history of it. The war machine is bipartisan, and that's who benefits from producing, expanding, continuing, provoking, aiding, abetting. I got a thesaurus here. I think I can figure out what Roger says. Oh, yeah, right. Replicating, implanting, you know, stoking, all those are classic maneuvers that they've done. And Ukraine is the tip of that iceberg. And unfortunately, I think they're in trouble, to be honest. I think the Russians are continuing with what they wanted. But look at this, the Easter truce. First of all, they had to get, you know, Zelensky's nuts in a vise to make him commit to it. He thought he could, you know, I don't know how he gets his acting skills. Like, how do you do? You can't do that. That's not the role to play. That's not how this play is written. The guy has a holiday ceasefire, obvious PR bullshit. Everybody knows that. But it is Christmas truce. We've read stories about that in the Great Patriotic War. I mean, World War One, the Great War. Sorry, I get the American and, you know, British thing always confused. I'll try to keep it on our side of the pond. But that's a common thing. So you just do it. But they had to kind of force him to do it. And they pushed and pushed in a way that they never have. All the main outlets printed Putin's Easter truce proclamation. And they've been, you know, saying nothing but he's probably lying. He probably is a Satanist. He's like boiling eggs in nuclear acid so that he can fill them. Who knows what they make up stuff that's funnier than what they come up with, which is supposedly the truth. But it was a big deal, and it goes a lot further. First of all, the ruling class is sick of this, and they want to kind of somehow move it onward. Doesn't mean stopping the war machine. It's not a peace candidate, remember, right? And he's not anti-war in any stretch of the imagination, right? You have all from Afghanistan to Yemen. You have almost the whole alphabet down there. So that's everyone who could be involved. But you want to shift the narrative. And this was an opportunity. And one of the things that I think people are overlooking, which I think is interesting in regard to the passing of the Pope, of the instance of the dating of Easter, like maybe I'm making this up, but hey, you know, I could run the New York Times, make stuff up and have it be a newspaper. So I appoint myself the Minister of Truth today. The Easter, Orthodox and Roman Easter's coinciding is very rare. I think it's every 20 years, or it's not that common. And you had this other thing, the whole thing about Ukraine, West and East, Russian and European. The thing about the Easter goes back to the Orthodoxy, the churches being raided and taken over by Zelensky's people, by, you know, right-wing nationalists, and so on. It had to do with the splitting of Ukraine from the beginning. As soon as independence, which is really difficult, people don't really understand, that's the first time that this thing called Ukraine has ever been an independent nation state. It's not true. It doesn't have a history as it is. It has much, much history. And Americans don't know any, except Henry Ford's one, which is good. One damn thing after another. He wasn't wrong. It certainly is. But one of the things after 1991, keeping the thing together, was this constant balance of not in whatever thing that you were getting involved in, not making the whole country swallow what only half the country accepted. And they did that balance for years. It was difficult with language and with religion, with cultural affiliations. And, you know, the Americans went in from the beginning, well, from Bandera's day, actually, but pushing and pushing that envelope to make it split. It has that great river right down the middle. You know, the Dnieper looks like it looks like if you're swinging an axe and trying to split a log, he's like, if I go for that crack, I'm going to do it right down the middle. It's going to be weird. But that is, I think, symbolic of this Easter opportunity, is the unity of those cultures is rare. It's like a blue moon. And all it was, look, we can stop doing this. First of all, you announce it a few hours before it takes place. Now, that was really smart of Vladimirovich. You know, and like, we're going to stop shooting now. Okay. Us too. Yeah, you better, because we got 4 or 5 tanks behind me. And if you don't stop shooting, you're going to be dead. And so there was a secondary order, which is double shoot if they shoot. And it looks good. It is kind of diligent and a thorough kind of diplomatic posture. But here's what happened. It always had a double meaning. Everything Russian usually does, which is odd, but it was also a test. Let's see how this works. He said, okay, well, first of all, he wouldn't take it, would he? No, but his handlers kind of forced him. All right, well, but he still did. That's not bad. Wow, holy shit. Did you see this? Yeah, there were some violations. There were, well, on our count, there were 5,000 violations. They had drones beyond the border in Russia. They were, you know, sending artillery against Russian troops. They had, it was just pinprick all over the place. And these were divisions over which Zelensky has absolutely no control. And quite frankly, nobody does. That's what I was talking about. That's the problem. How and what the Russian general staff and Putin met with Gerasimov, I think this morning or yesterday, I don't know, and were talking about this very thing. What does this mean? How, what, well, we're going to have to watch this. Okay, this means there's no permanent ceasefire in just in abeyance waiting to be implemented. It's not possible. There's not a solution kind of hanging there waiting like ripe fruit. These people do not control the whole of their military infrastructure that the West has instilled them with. And we don't know if they're going to say, do what they say they're going to do. And we don't know who will pretend to have control or who will have control and which parts they will control. And in the meantime, that's what I said. There are these two things. That's a military and a diplomatic kind of tectonic shifting. And what you're seeing instead of the Dnieper is like a volcanic ridge that is going to blow up, because you can't, it's hard to do all that at once. On the surface, yes, you're listening. Let's see what Trump has to say about this. But on the down low, or really on the front burner, because they're still there, all they did was tell their troops to stop for 30 hours. You say, okay, now this is what we're going to have to look out for. First, never trust some crap that the Americans come up with, because they're just trying to make themselves look good. Don't trust the Europeans at all. They're on crack. I don't know what is going on there. But also, Zelensky doesn't have control over his pet Nazis. When we don't really know if he's the Nazi pet. Like, it's you know, it's a little bit of everything mixed up in there. And it's not, yes, from essay, it is. I don't think it's futile because the outcome is as inevitable as it has been from the start, without massive, massive infiltration from the West.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
There's nothing going to happen there. Maybe Ukraine. I said this 10 years ago, and it was a article I wrote on a Russian website. Even the Russians took it down. They were so they were like, they said, this is this parrot from the Monty Python. This parrot is no more. This parrot has ceased to be. And that was the status of Ukraine as a nation as we knew it. And I think that outcome is inevitable. The way it will look is not quite known yet. But for the Americans to say that they are forcing concessions from Ukraine so that they can recognize Crimea is Russian. It's like, what? Krim Rus. Crimea is Russia. They have sandals that are printed in the sand to make that in Cyrillic language. It says, Krim Nash. Crimea is ours. They have for about 15 years. I wish I had gotten up here, but I don't have a sandy beach to walk. Anyway. And the other 4 oblasts from Kherson, Zaporozhye, Lugansk, Donetsk. I think the only question now is who's going to run it? And the West wants it to continue to be this regime. That's hopeless, absolutely hopeless, will not, cannot work. The army unreduced, that can't work. Not recognizing or calling them territorial concessions, that can't work. You can't, and the Easter truce, is this like the withdrawing forces from around Beirut? Is this like the proposed treaty in Istanbul? Is this like Minsk 1? Is it like Minsk 2? Is it like, I mean, and you have to also dig into history to see who recognizes it and who repeats it. And I think that is something about which I have kind of a hopeful feeling, like maybe people are kind of getting it. You know, China, Russia, and Iran, for example, are a new game in town. And they don't look at how China is responding to Trump, say, hey, buddy, look. Ooh, 385%. Look, we can count too. We took math up through the 8th grade, and then we made, you know, nuclear reactors. This was, we were only 13, so we could do minor, you know, science stuff in China.
Let me pause you down. Let me pause you down because we're halfway through. Forever.
I don't care.
Yeah. So, Dan and I thank everybody who subscribed to his channel last week. Remember, the week before, his channel got nuked, so we had to restart. And I'm going to put Dan's channel link in the live chat. So please subscribe. Let's get his
He won't also get nuked. Just let them know.
He's at 112 subs right now on his new channel. After the one got nuked. So if you're tuning in, if you're not subbed to Dan, please sub to his new channel. And if you've got any questions, put them in the chat. We've got about 20 minutes left.
Okay.
Before Kevin Annette comes in to talk about the death of the Pope. And that's at 10 o'clock. Kevin Annette's going to be live taking your questions. Are you suspicious about the timing of the death of the Pope or anything, Dan?
You know, I don't know. I saw Kevin's thing with the, he was the murder by decree, right? Wasn't he the author?
Yeah.
And I mean, every country has that. You know, my ancestors were all Catholic, and that was my upbringing as well. But there's so much. And the way they all fit together, the church, the corporations, and the government and the crown. It's like Canada is pretty scary. It has a very good reputation as a harmless little pink country. Well, big, but that's because we haven't taken over the rest of their land yet. I don't know. My wife said that. And she said, oh, come on. There's no, he, the day after Easter, he was dead before. They didn't want, and they rolled him out yesterday. I was like, wait a minute. Is that the guy? Because this is pretty key. Because he went out and he did, you know, I don't know who it was, but it is extremely providential. Can you say that? Does that sound non-conspiratorial?
So,
listen, stay and listen to Kevin, because I'm sure he'll have more stuff to say on that.
we've joked with several guests about the good Tulsi and the bad Tulsi. Has she switched? Well, she was the bad Tulsi when she was bombing Yemen, but now it seems she's had Trump's ear to talk him out of bombing Iran's nuclear reactors, which would possibly contaminate the entire world. What do you think? What do you make of that madness?
I don't know what good Tulsi, bad Tulsi is. Really hard for me, because it's kind of like good Trump and bad Trump. You know, everyone thought it was, or not everyone, but anti governors and sort of Trumpishists were excited that she was appointed as, you know, for intelligence. But I think that these things are moved more on the ground than they are in back rooms of the State Departments. This is not something, I mean, how do they have to review the footage of the last time that Israel tried to send missiles into Iran? Or did someone sneak a copy of a transcript of Putin's warning to Trump that said, you know, look, just so you know, we're giving them missiles and we're giving them S-400s, or air defense is what they said. I don't know what that, fighter jets and air defense. Like, this is not Libya. This is not Syria. Not anymore. And I don't think that had much to do with Tulsi Gabbard. I think that there's more connections, say, between the Apple walk back, right? How you have China saying, okay, fine, make your own, you know, pick your own apples. And then these corporations somehow having Trump's ear, or something said, well, we didn't mean this and that. We didn't mean these kinds of iPhones and other computer items. So there has always been an interlink between, you know, obviously economic and military and stuff like that. So I think that reality on the ground is what even the UN, I mean, obviously they can't do anything because they're the unknighted nations, unfair, unimportant, unsecure. But the head of the UN just said he had grave doubts or questions about the US bombing Yemen, because their bombs are just the only thing, just like you know, Fallujah, just like Agent Orange. The only thing they can do is bomb the crap out of whatever is there. And so they do enormous damage to civilian infrastructure that has incredibly, I mean, overweighted non-reciprocal force. And that is going to anger some of the other people, the other 7/8 of the people in the world who haven't had any power until now. And you have someone, say, for example, the UN chief, who does supposedly have an ear for that thing happening. So if you're, if you put together Yemen, Iran, Israel's attacks on Iran, like, it's like, okay, oh, in the 90-day, his own truce, that's right, his anti-tariff truce, his 90-day truce, you put that all in break mode. This is the administration or junta. I don't know why we call Western regimes, you know, administrations, like, as if they are picked by the will of the people. You know, they, we think the cabal in DC is, wait a minute, we may be moving too fast or in the wrong direction. And then if you want any of that narrative, I don't like the TDS narrative because I think it's just too, like, lazy, you know. But if you read his Easter blurb word for word, he didn't, nobody planted that. It's repulsive. I mean, the guy is beyond belief. You know, what he says, and you can't say all the immigration stuff has all happened with other regimes. All the war stuff has all happened with other presidents. All of the crimes against humanity has a long, long, long history that goes way before Trump. But the guy is a wacko. I mean, how do you say those things, allow them to be printed with your name attached to it? You can't. That's the thing, is that it's really hard to defend an extension of everything bad that everyone else has done, because he's doing it too. Because you sound like a yeah, but everyone else did it too. Yeah, but he took these guys, came and took this girl off the street. She's a grad student at Tufts, and they bashed this guy's windshield, and they got the wrong guy. Like, I know cops. I've been mistreated in many ways myself, and had nothing to do with Donald Trump. I guarantee you. But it doesn't mean that none of this is news. This is an American regime on the cusp of a historical shift. We're seeing enormous economic and military shifts in what is going on. We've all seen the meme of the countries that all turned red since 2000, who your top trading partner is, right? And they're all blue, or half of them in 2000. It's all the United States, and boom, every single, it's just China, 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 China. And I don't think appointing a better Tulsi, or having Tulsi on a good day instead of a bad day, or any of the kind of social media self-referential vomit is going to produce anything that overrides the decent lessons of history. This is just that. You have to know what has happened and what is happening. That's not. And I don't, frankly, it's not that I don't, it's not that I like the guy, but I don't see him changing too much in the way things are going.
So do you think that the tariff war with China is going to enhance BRICS and make the BRICS countries more dependent on each other, and thus hurt U.S. suppliers of certain goods?
You know, again, the thing about the toddler or the crazy brother-in-law, something, what China and Russia and Iran and the whole rest of the world have been doing, not just for Trump, but for decades, is to play along to get along. And then all of a sudden they say, all right, well, fine. Listen, then you can't send any F-150s. No more Ford trucks. That's it. And the door is almost always more open one way than it is the other. They don't have all the sanctions, all the restrictions, all the, in fact, they decided not, or at least so far, aside from Enronding Swift and a bunch of other things, they are not competing with the dollar on a currency level. They're not going to make their own currency that shuts out the dollar, et cetera, et cetera. Their bilateral trades and stuff like this, they're going to keep going as they are, with more equitable distribution of power, more ideas that are not one person in the room, but relate to some sort of collective arrangement. And that would include the United States. I know Danny, he's a friend of mine. That would include the United States at some point, but it can't if they keep pushing. You can't push to be king of the mountain when the other person just wants to all sip tea at the top of Mount Everest, whatever. I don't know. It's not America's doing. And China will not back down, not because they're fighting, but because they're existing. They're just continuing, well, we make stuff. They've been doing a massive diplomatic tour throughout the rest of East Asia. And they have been making strides with Malaysia, with Vietnam, certainly Laos. They have these projects in every one of these countries that are not, at least not ripping off the people by suppressing any of their native development, like the Anglo-American empires have done for 500 years, then they try to come in and say, well, you're creating a debt trap. It's like, again, like that's the jersey switch with the hockey player. Like, you are not a referee of anything. You are a guy who ripped us off for the last 10 decades. So this guy says he has something we might be able to use. It sounds good. We're going to listen to him for a while. Get back to us in 30 years, and we'll see if you still get from your own country, if you have one.
Yeah. So if, the Americans are moving away from Ukraine, does that mean the French and the Brits are going to be trying to fill the slack still? Do they have the resources to even do that?
What I think the real problem is the answer, the question, this is going to be very unshocking and unhistorian. I'm sorry. I don't want to blow up your thumbnail. But the war is continuing. That war is no good for anybody except for the weapons manufacturers, the native, neo-Nazis, and a few of the more extremist whack jobs in the state and CIA. But there's nothing they can do. They don't have the resources. And Taurus, is Mertz really going to go through with this Taurus thing? That's an attack. That is like what Kennedy said about missiles from Cuba. That would require a retaliatory attack by the U.S. on the Soviet Union. Remember that? That was 1962. It hasn't changed. The logic is no different. It's ridiculous for them to be considering it. And there are some people within the Citadel who are pointing out that truth. But it's bluster, 90% bluster. The problem is, what do you do with all this mess? And I don't know how high a wall you could build along the Dnieper or just east, maybe. I don't know. I had a map along with that old article. I'll email that to you because that was that blue and yellow mixed right along. And I thought it looked, whoa, that looks bad. But I think
so. So Marie wants to know if you could recommend a documentary like an expose on Zelensky.
Oh, God. I can Google it. There is so much. Do you want a commenter in a previous one said that they found the blurbs, the video clips of him at the front being shamed by Azov anti-Russian killers, and someone did one about a movie making them. Something about making the movie, but I don't have one at the tip of my brain. We're watching it happen.
We've got a question from Jeremy, which is an interesting question. What if some unforeseen cataclysm changes freaking everything?
Well, if the world ends, I don't think we're in. Any of us are going to be able to complain. But what is that if the Zelensky's partisans are able to do some sort of a dirty nuclear bomb, I don't know, or is he talking about a new global depression? That, you know,
I think he's talking about a black swan event.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe a nuclear event.
Well, one scenario is that France and the UK send troops to Ukraine, and then those troops get killed, and then next thing, you know, they're crying to Trump, France and UK are crying to Trump, Russia's now killing Europeans, you got to get back in and protect us.
You do have to kind of pull the skin back on the onion, you know, between the mainstream narrative and the not the actual truth, but what people already know. Putin's killed plenty of Europeans. All those people in Kursk, in NATO, they're all officers. They're all Europeans. They're all Frenchmen and Germans and Norwegians. You know, Slovaks, Czechs, whatever, Poland has sent a million people. That has already been happening. And he already said, they are absolute participants. So everybody knows. You can just spread it out the way you want, however Macron and Starmer can try to fluff it up. You can't, that is a nuclear strike. That is absolutely incredible that you could say publicly that you were going to send French and British troops into Ukraine. It's insanity. Mm-hmm. And on a diplomatic level, behind the scenes, everybody knows this. So the thing about the cataclysm is, where does it start? If there was nuclear war, would that provoke a nuclear war, which would then result in a nuclear war, which would create a nuclear disaster? Yeah. But those are already beyond. Well, yes, Hegg said, that's right. There's this guy, Ray J. Hegg says, has already said, if you choose, there will be no Article 5 cover. There can't be. They won't do it. And then you could have China step in, just as you will have Russia step in Iran's favor. Not the cataclysm. I know that doesn't sell well to have it subtle and a little behind the scenes, but it does happen in off script ways. You're so not Nikki, trying to just pull the plug on the dollar.
Nikki wants to know the significance of China's presence and control economically in the Caribbean and Africa.
Well, it's exactly what it looks like. It's amazing. It is just making the world safe for non-American a seat. I don't want to say democracy because that raises everyone's eyebrows. But having the Caribbean means that, you know, when you talk about the Panama Canal, also things that are happening in Peru, the building a port in Chancay that will be kind of the receptor of huge volumes of trade that save 2 weeks getting to Brazil from the other way around. And all of this stuff is, it's funny that someone pointed out that particular area, the Caribbean, also Africa. Africa is starving for development. All the problems that the racists in Europe whine about the Africans are coming on, about the black people are coming. And, you know, Gaddafi said, good, let them come until Europe turns black, then we'll be all better. But the larger point is he was trying to set up an African dinar, a system that kept people happy and growing in their own infrastructure, in their own communities. And that's what China is going to solve those problems of the world, not just for Africa. Why don't the Europeans understand that? I don't understand.
And how encircled is China by U.S. military bases?
They did the same thing Iran did. You can look at the bases. Who did they put their country right there in the middle of all those U.S. bases and claim that, you know, we're a threat? Japan, Taiwan, Korea. Then you come in the other sides. The other sides are where real danger is, Xinjiang and Tibet. Because this is what the globalists do, is they have the balkanization. And if they can kind of cut the PRC off at the knees and have their expatriates and exiles go in to each of these regions and set up false governments, then they can promote the reintroduction of neoliberal economic philosophy. And that's why they are being surrounded in so many ways and why they are broken out. You remember, what was it about things leaking in biology? It's the corpuscle. It doesn't have to break. It can bleed into other organs, other areas. And so they have leaked through all of the surrounding military encirclement and economic encirclement. And we are in a really, really great position vis-a-vis history in the midterm. The short term, we're all screwed, Sean.
Thank you.
Sorry.
I'm optimistic. Thank you, Dan. We're at the hour. Huge thank you for coming on. It is always a great pleasure. Dan's link for his channel is in the live chat. It's in the description box. Let's help him rise after he got nuked, please, folks.
Rise.
Let's support what he's doing.
Rise up in Phoenix, Arizona.
And Kevin, yes, and Kevin Annette is coming up next. This video will take you over to that one. I'm going to let Dan go and get on with his Easter Monday. Have a cheerful one. Cheerio. Thank you.
Thank you.
Toodaloo. Bye-bye. Bye. All right, folks. So let me get myself bigger again. Can I do that somehow? There I am. All right, yeah. So we covered a lot on the Pope today. We did. We showed the Kevin Annette series we pre-recorded over the years. And he's just got back to me an hour or so ago saying he's going to come in live now. So I'm going to end this one. It's going to take you over to him and get your questions ready, folks, because we haven't had him on for a while. He's like the David Icke of the Vatican, exposing the Vatican and the Pope. It's a good day for it. Anyway, I will...
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets.
You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.